to come. That's because your municipal leaders are the ones deciding the how, what, when, and where's of your water and its delivery. And perhaps more importantly, deciding in whose interests that water will be managed. Susan Blackman is an author and water policy campaigner with the National Council of Women of Canada. They've launched a countrywide awareness effort to address Canada's coast-to-coast-to-coast water crisis. Susan's books are Water Confidential, Witnessing Justice Denied, The Fight for Safe Drinking Water in Indigenous and Rural Communities in Canada, and her latest, Water Justice, What You Don't Know Could Kill You. Her recent article at the Watershed Sentinel, Your Water, Your Vote, The Questions Candidates Hope You Won't Ask, is a how-to on holding aspirant politicos' feet to the fire on water issues. Susan Blackman in the first half. And last week, Palestinians at home and around the world commemorated Nakba 78 in remembrance of the grinding 80 years of war and occupation they've suffered at the hands of Zionism. But now the ethnic cleansing has accelerated in Gaza and the West Bank, along with expansion into neighboring Syria and Lebanon, into what the United Nations yesterday charged was a policy of eradication. More ominously, perhaps, among Israel's allies, its aiders and abettors, diplomatic, financial, and material support has expanded to now include suppression through the courts and police batons of citizens opposing the gross abuse of both international law and plain human decency. Evan Jones is a retired University of Sydney professor of political economy whose articles can be found at Counterpunch and The Independent Australian, among other places. Jones says he, quote, began reading and writing about Palestine, Israel over 20 years ago with rising disgust over Israel's barbarism and the endless misrepresentation in the Western mainstream media. His recent piece at Counterpunch, Australia as Zionist Occupied Territory, chronicles the Albanese government's reactive legal measures following the December Bondi Beach massacre. Evan Jones on Australia cohesing with its second colonial master in the second half. But first, Susan Blackland and the urgency of Canada's water policy. Welcome to the program, Susan.
Thank you very much for inviting me here, Chris, today.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Of course, before we begin, can you give the territorial acknowledgement from the place where you are up in the Mid-Island at Qualicum Beach?
I'd be happy to. I give thanks to the First Nations for both allowing and enabling me to live a life of privilege on their lands. I try to acknowledge my appreciation of this gift by standing in solidarity on the myriad of issues where they have been wronged. In part, writing is my declaration that I stand in solidarity with Indigenous peoples in Canada. I do not profess to have all the answers. I hope that by sharing what I know with others, many will open their eyes and minds to new ways of thinking, processing what they learn or need to unlearn, and pressure those in positions of power to step up and take appropriate action towards true reconciliation.
Thank you. Your article, the article in the Watershed Sentinel, it references, quote, the foundational public health issue. And that reminded me of cholera and other waterborne illnesses that plagued cities a couple of centuries ago, especially in Europe, but here on this side of the water, too. What, Susan, is the nature of the current threat as you see it facing us here in Canada?
There are so many people, Canadian physicians for the environment, doctors, all kinds of researchers, all reporting huge increases in cancers. So I'm not the scientist. I just look at what they're finding out and what they're sharing with people, along with the increase in cancers. I have kids that have my grandchildren. I know of so many friends with their children. Infertility is a huge issue. In First Nations communities, children being born who are unable to speak when they're affected by the oil industry, the health issues are significant and growing rapidly. And it boggles my mind that Health Canada seem to not be aware.
Well, and in your article, again, it's your water, your vote, the questions candidates hope you won't ask. people may be aware of some of the issues. I wasn't aware, certainly, of the asbestos issue and the asbestos water pipes, which I find I can't even get my head around right now, other than to say, well, it was another time when they went in. But a lot of people that do know might feel disempowered, feel that their voice can't be heard, isn't heard no matter what, so that they might just give up. You're saying in your article, well, the municipal elections upcoming are your chance to weigh in on this. How does one go about that, and what role do the municipalities play in the emplacement of these odious asbestos water pipe systems?
Well, all of our problems go back to the Constitution in Canada, and that is where they try to make provinces, or they do make provinces, responsible for drinking water for non-Indigenous communities. But it really boils down to the local municipal level, because that's where we have so many communities who are abandoning asbestos water pipes in place. When they do that, what they're doing is creating toxic waste sites. It's just a matter of time in the future until a child playing in the dirt, a person putting in a fence post, or perhaps there's large equipment in as they're building a new home or whatever's going on in the community. People are going to disturb that soil, and they're going to get affected by the asbestos fibers that will cause cancer. That's a known fact. And yet these communities are abandoning these pipes as if nobody's looking, and they can get away with that, knowing full well what the problems are creating. The big reason for it is that it costs about $2.6 million per kilometer to remove the asbestos cement pipes. They do not have the tax bases to support that kind of expense. There is a federal program to support the funding of removing them. I'm not aware of a single community that has ever applied for it. They take the easy way out instead, and that's primarily because we have an organization called WorkSafe BC. And if you work in a bakery and you drop something heavy on your toe, WorkSafe BC rush out there to assess whether there's something wrong with the pan you dropped on your toe or the procedure you were using that did it. I started contacting WorkSafe BC a year ago with specific locations where asbestos pipes had been abandoned in the soil. And WorkSafe BC have gone out of their way to pass this hot potato around. They are adamant that they shouldn't have to do anything about it. They shouldn't be holding the people accountable. And I'm not sure which is worse, the communities that think they can get away with it, perhaps they know they can get away with it, or the organization that's supposed to be upholding and protecting public health, which is WorkSafe BC, and they're not. So I don't know which one is the worst. WorkSafe BC is governed by Department of Labor. I've brought it to the attention of the MLAs in the area, to the MP in the area, to the Minister of Labor, the Minister of Health, and they all have a deafening silence, which I find really despicable.
Well, it might be better understood if we know that WorkSafe BC comes from the WCB, the Workers' Compensation Board, which was set up by industry, and it was a way to stop lawsuits by workers hurt by irresponsible employers. So they're bent towards industry and government. It's no surprise to me, at least. But I know that there's people out there still shaking their heads, Susan, going, "What did she just say, asbestos water pipes?" Everybody pretty much, I think, knows asbestos is dangerous, and it's always associated with the fibers, as you described, being inhaled on the workplace, too. I can tell you a story about my own exposure, but in the water pipes, really? How did that happen?
Well, it's been happening since the after the Second World War. They decided this was a magic process to put asbestos in the cement, and it was supposed to be much more durable and so forth. It had a 70-year maximum life expectancy, which has already passed. The problem is that in 1992, the U.S. declared that asbestos cement water pipes were carcinogenic and banned them from use. Canada, the problem here is Health Canada. I mean, Health Canada should be protecting public health of Canadians. I think they're extremely remiss in this area. They know that inhaling asbestos causes cancer. There's no second guessing it. There's no question about it. Now, if somebody inhales asbestos fibers, the chances are it's going to be an irritant. They're going to cough. They're probably going to develop mucus. They're probably going to develop phlegm, and they're going to swallow it. And that phlegm will have the asbestos fibers in it, which will then proceed to cause cancers anywhere through the gastrointestinal tract, the digestive system, the stomach, and very often in the colon. And so that's a known fact. But Health Canada has claimed that there's insufficient evidence to prove that it causes cancer if you drink the water. And so I fail to see how drinking the water is any different from swallowing the fibers when you've inhaled it once it's into your bodily system. So it just boggles my mind. And most people are completely unaware that these pipes are across Canada. We know we have 14,000 kilometers of them. There's numerous communities who have not reported them. That is because it was not compulsory to do so. And the fact that we know there's 14,000, Prevent Cancer Now, a fabulous charity that's all run by volunteer scientists. Nobody is getting paid. They are all concerned about the health of Canadians. And they have put up a very detailed spreadsheet. You can go into Prevent Cancer Now or PCN and just ask, where are asbestos cement water pipes? And they have a detailed spreadsheet by province, by community, across the country. And our community, Colligan Beach, has 26 kilometers. We're only a population of less than 9,000. But out of that 26 kilometers, I estimate that there's probably 50 locations of toxic waste sites, because Qualicum Beach is one of the communities where they've had no problem abandoning these toxic pipes in place.
Well, I know when people work in asbestos environments, talking again about WorkSafe, the workers have to really suit up, and you've got to protect the area around where the work is taking place, tenting and ventilation and all the rest. So you think, Susan, that this is part of the reluctance of municipalities to take the grants that you mentioned from the federal government and begin remission of these toxic, whether they're in use or not in use, these toxic pipes, just because it's so disruptive?
I can't explain the answer. I actually stopped in a Soyuz last week, and there was construction of water pipes on, I think it's 89th Street in a Soyuz. And I stopped and went out and spoke to the workers. And yes, they're just tying into asbestos. And so I said, well, you know, do you wear the appropriate and PPE that's required by law? And he made the comment, oh, well, only Joe and one other guy get off on dressing up on all that white stuff. He says, the rest of us don't bother with it. And almost made fun of it instead of treating it seriously. And I said, well, do you realize the health risks that you yourself are up against and any other workers? And then I found out that the workers are not unionized. And so the town of Osoyoos has contracted a company called TwinCon, and they don't have any unionized employees. And so they have nobody providing guidance or educating the employees. And then I asked, well, are you notifying all of the residents of the problem? And you're supposed to have signage up. And he says, oh, no, we don't worry about that. We do it all in the trench. So, you know, the fibers, you know, they're only a problem in the trench. Once you're out of the trench, they're not a problem. They're nothing to worry about. And I ask myself, on what grade level of education do you have to be telling people this? And all the residents weren't notified. It just boggles my mind. It's an attitude. It's an expectancy that Health Canada and our government will protect us. And I think that's probably the most dangerous thing in Canada, because there are so many awful things going on around the world, so many wars and so many issues and so many things we want to fight and object to, Palestinian poor people, you know. Surely we don't have to start here at home. Surely we can trust our own government. And the bottom line is, no, we can't.
Well, that's a great point. And I, as I mentioned off air, I just finished watching a webinar you took part in, Crystal Clear or Cloudy, with Meg Sears of Prevent Cancer Now. And she mentioned this CFB Moose Jaw and the dangers faced by the service people on that military base. And it struck me at the time that asbestos will injure and kill way more Canadians than Russia or Iran or any other of these external threats that our politicians beat their breast in front of the cameras and talk about the safety and security of Canadians and the billions upon billions necessary to ensure that, building weapons and sending them over to be dropped on Palestinians, for example, as part of that. And yet the people at that base face dangers, as asbestos, as your commenter said, might be the least of. Do you want to explain a little bit about what's going on at Moose Jaw?
Well, Moose Jaw is typical of many airports and many military bases, in that the PFAs are in a lot of the products, such as the de-icing materials that are used on the planes. They fall into the land. And from there, they don't go away. They're called forever chemicals for a reason. They don't leave the soil. They don't leave the water. They don't leave your body when they get into it. And I'd like to bring up something that just happened in the Netherlands in February of this year. They just banned, nobody is allowed to sell and nobody is allowed to purchase free-range eggs anymore. Now, why would that be? Well, it's because the Dutch are right up there on analyzing and testing, and they have found that the eggs are containing PFAs, and that's because the chickens that are free range are pecking around in the grass and the dirt, and they're eating earthworms, and the earthworms are laden with PFAs. And what I find really, really alarming about that is that it doesn't seem to be a problem in the chickens, but it's in the eggs. And one of the things that Meg brought up in that webinar, which I didn't know until then, was that the latest research has confirmed that PFAs and pesticides and chemicals of the likes will linger in the DNA and get passed on for up to 20 generations.
This was this was a mouse study.
Yes, it was a mouse study, but that they test mice because that's what usually is happening in people. So maybe it's not 20 in people, maybe it's 10. But I mean, it's alarming. You know, our indigenous people have always said that it's seven generations that we have to prepare for. We would do well to be governed by indigenous people rather than the present government. I don't know if you realize what Prime Minister Carney did just a week ago. He suggested that, and I don't think it's happened, I hope it hasn't happened, but that if industry is wanting to register either an adjustment to an existing pesticide or a new pesticide, if they don't get a green light from the regulatory board that covers all those registrations, the industry can then approach an MP, any MP in Canada, and that MP must give a passing green light to expedite that new pesticide or chemical.
I think the language was something to the effect of taking the decisions out of the hands of the bureaucrats or out of the hands of the agency and putting it into the hands of the members of parliament, as if this was a great democratizing move Carney was making by getting rid of these kinds of safety regulations.
Yeah, I on Earth Day, I was in Nanaimo, and Sheila Malcolmson is the MLA for part of Nanaimo, and I got the chance to speak to her, and I said, wow, you must be super pleased that you have a water treatment plant, one of only two in the country, that is state of the art and capable of removing PFAs and pharmaceuticals and so forth. And she looked at me aghast and she said, I do? I didn't know I had a water treatment plant in my jurisdiction. And I said, well, you do. And so if you have something, and Sheila used to be an MP before she was an MLA. Now, when we're looking at an education level that doesn't even know they have a water treatment plant in their jurisdiction, being able to overthrow any decision by a pesticide regulatory board, we have a major problem in this country. Even thinking that was a good idea is a major problem.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Susan Blackland. Susan's an author and water policy campaigner with the National Council of Women of Canada. They've launched a countrywide awareness effort to address Canada's coast-to-coast-to-coast water crisis. Her books are Water Confidential, Witnessing Justice Denied, The Fight for Safe Drinking Water in Indigenous and Rural Communities in Canada. Her latest is Water Justice, What You Don't Know Could Kill You. Her recent article at the Watershed Sentinel is Your Water, Your Vote, The Questions Candidates Hope You Won't Ask. You're obviously not born in Canada. Your accent gives you away. And I was interested to read of you and your former husband's his work as a scientist going to First Nations communities in Canada, and especially his innovative water filtration design. Can you talk a little bit about your beginnings in this country, in this field?
The system that my ex-husband developed was called the Integrated Biological Reverse Osmosis Membrane Water Treatment System. Now, that system was very unique in that I'm not aware of others at the time that did not require chemicals. For a population of 300, which is a very small community, they were saving in excess of $100,000 a year in chemicals by putting this system in. The system could have gone into every First Nation in Canada, Indigenous Services Canada. At the time, they were called Indian and Northern Affairs Canada, were absolutely not interested. There could have been varying systems put in, maybe not through their distribution system, but giving them absolutely safe drinking water at their wellhead or at the source water where it was treated. They were not interested in doing that for them. Now, the membrane is a critical part of that process, and they're expensive. There's no getting away from it. Water Canada did an article about 6 months or a year ago saying how these membranes are so expensive that they price themselves out of the market. Well, my perspective is totally different, because I don't think, unless those membranes are over $1 million a piece, what they do in removing PFAS, pharmaceuticals, pesticides, chemicals, as well as all the waterborne diseases and so forth, I think they're a heck of a good value for their money. And it is the only way forward. That's the way the Netherlands are making sure that their people all are protected with safe drinking water. You cannot test your way to safe drinking water. You have to build a system that will remove whatever contaminant arrives when it arrives. You must be prepared for it. It's not a case of what's there today. It's the case of what might come.
Yeah, I wonder how affordable is cancer when we're weighing out the cost risk benefit analysis of all these things. In your article, again, at the Watershed Sentinel, and I recommend everybody go to watershedsentinel.ca. to read Susan Blackland's article there. You give 23 questions that people should be prepared to pose to whoever is running for municipal office in their jurisdictions. I was really interested, Susan, in watching the webinar, Crystal Clear or Cloudy, in the Q&A section at the end. There were some great questions came up, and one of them concerned my city here and the water treatment, the system we have, that was built a few years ago. It was very controversial, massively expensive, and now what it does is create so-called biosolids or toxics. Mm-hmm. Toxic sludge, as a former guest here wrote a book about that very thing many years ago in the United States, but they prefer biosolids is an easier term to sell to the people when you want to distribute the downstream effects of this water filtration onto the soil. This has been proposed by Victoria Up Island. Do you want to mention that?
Yes, I'm actually speaking tonight at workshop or gathering in Cedar, just south of Nanaimo, on this very subject, because Victoria has made an arrangement with the mayor of Nanaimo. I guess he thought it was a good idea to bring in a few dollars. And so now Nanaimo is spreading the biosolids from Victoria all along the Nanaimo riverbank.
And what are they?
And
And can you describe too what the biosolids contain?
okay, well, again, I'm the messenger, I'm not the scientist, but my understanding is that although they have been incinerated to some level into solids or dried, I'm not sure what the process would be called, they are still highly carcinogenic. They still have the pesticides, they still have the chemicals, they still have the E. coli and all of the things that come out of the sewage. And that's a result of all the crazy things we're flushing down the toilets and drains. So these things, but I want to mention one thing, being as you've brought this up. At this same event on Earth Day in Nanaimo, I was situated right next to Mosaic Forestry. And one of the visitors came and gave me a little marketing brochure that Mosaic were handing out. And on it, Mosaic said, "How is drinking water regulated?" Drinking water in British Columbia is heavily regulated along the whole supply chain from source to tap. Well, the fact is, there are no regulations for drinking water anywhere in Canada. Canada is the only country in the G7 who has no drinking water regulations. Now, if we have no regulations, it's impossible to have heavily regulated drinking water. And with no protection, never mind any regulations for source waters, it is impossible for water to be regulated from source to tap. So here you have a company that is Canadian-owned, most significantly by public service pension funds, and ultimately by the British Columbia Investment Management Corporation, putting out completely false information that gives the general public a false sense of trust. They're trying to uphold this, oh, we live in this great country where we have democracy and we have safe drinking water. And the bottom line is, we don't. I mean, it's a lie.
Well, one of a great many, and the testing is inadequate in this country. We, and as again, we don't have time, but the Imperial College, University of London, you mentioned, did come up with a system somehow that for detecting asbestos in water. It was quashed. The Health Canada, health in scare quotes, doesn't think that drinking asbestos is a problem for Canadians. So bottoms up. The you say, Susan, in the end too, and I'll quote you from your article again in the Watershed Sentinel: "Water is not a policy file. It's not a line item. It's not something to get around to after the parking structure debate is resolved. Water is life. Right now, it's asking urgently to be treated like it." Thanks a lot, Susan. As I say, there's a ton more that we could get into. I don't have time to do it in this format. You must promise to come back, and we can talk about AI and some of the many other questions involved, and see what happens after our municipal elections if we make any progress. In signing off, though, Susan, how do you recommend our listeners educate themselves further and get ideas of how to get involved?
Well, start by reading my book, please. And it's you can get it at libraries, you can get it at bookstores, you can get it in an e-book or paper book. It's available in USA and Europe as well as Canada. Start by reading and educating yourself. If reading's not your thing, go on my website, susanblackland.com. I've got numerous presentations there, webinars, podcasts and so forth. If you like that better, educate yourself that way. But do not expect that your government or Health Canada is looking out for you, because they're not. You have to look out for yourself. I would love to come back at any time, Chris. Thank you.
Well, that's great, Susan. And you have to look out for your neighbors too. And this is a point
Yes.
that you come up again and again. You say, "Oh, it's my water is okay," but no, there's no such thing as my water. There's our water. We put the we back in water. The books are water justice. What you don't know could kill you. And your water, your vote. The question candidates hope you won't ask is the article at the Watershed Sentinel, Susan's first book, Water Confidential, as a primer, witnessing justice denied. The fight for safe drinking water in Indigenous and rural communities in Canada, an ongoing shame in this country. Thanks a lot, Susan, for coming on. Everybody else, stay tuned. I'm going to be back after the break with Evan Jones from Down Under. We're going to talk a little bit about democracy in that eye, one of the Five Eyes countries. Thanks again, Susan.
Thank you very much for having me, Chris.
Escape the Narrative. It's Guerrilla Radio.